Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where seeing things differently inspires limitless possibilities. The Limitless podcast was created in order to inform, educate, entertain, and share stories from within the blind and partially sighted community that show that the opportunities for those who are blind or partially sighted are truly limitless. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to your host, the founder of Blind Beginnings, Sean Marcellet.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. Thank you for joining us. We are talking about audio versus braille in terms of, I guess, taking in content, reading, listening. So we're going to talk all things audio and braille. And with me today are my co-hosts, Clement and Ginny. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Hello. Great to be back.
Yeah. Great to be back.
Why don't you remind our listeners who you are? I feel like our regulars know you quite well by now, but just remind level of vision and I guess which format do you subscribe to? Are you team audio or team braille?
All right. I'm Ginny. I am a university student and I've been blind my whole life. And for me, I prefer braille. But I use both, and I also prefer audio in specific circumstances, but I'm a pretty big, braille, I would say, enthusiast.
Okay.
My name is Clement, and I'm also blind from birth, and I would say I am strongly in favor of braille unless I can't get the books I want.
Okay. Well, so I have a degenerative eye condition and learned to read print and could read print sort of very small, like two letters at a time sort of thing until I was 18. So because I didn't learn braille until I was 18, I am definitely team audio. If I tried to read a book in braille, it would take me a very long time. It would be tedious and difficult. And I love audio. So that I fully support braille, understand the importance of it, wish I had learned it younger, but for me, it's audio all the way. So I'm glad that I'm here to represent the audio side of the preference. Okay, well, let's talk about maybe why we wanted to talk about this. Ginny, why did you want to talk about this?
Yeah, so I think that one thing that you kind of pointed out, Sean, is like you weren't really taught braille at a young age. And now, even as well, like a lot of kids are not being taught braille. They are being moved right away to audio and technology because technology has advanced and that's great. But braille is kind of being seen as obsolete when it's really not, and it's actually impacting literacy as well. And I think that taking away sort of that way of communicating and reading and writing is something that needs to be talked about more. I also find that a lot of the time when you ask for braille or talk about braille, there seems to be a lot of dollar signs that pop up or a lot of hesitancy that pops up just because it's a bit more tedious. So just kind of also figuring out how we can make a better system and things like that.
Clement, why did you want to talk about this?
Well, similar reasons, but you know, I've found that the older I get, and even with my tendency to read more stuff that isn't available in braille, I do appreciate braille whenever I can find it. And like Ginny said, a lot of kids, I don't know if they're not being taught braille anymore, but I think it's less of an emphasis nowadays than it used to be. When I was growing up, mostly because now that, you know, everyone is doing assignments on their computers or phones or tablets, Braille isn't quite as necessary anymore. And I think the issue primarily that concerns me is literacy and being able to write in a way that's presentable. Because when you listen your whole life, the issue is you don't know how text is visually laid out, and you don't know how spelling and punctuation work, because screen readers and narrators will pause, you know, not necessarily depending, especially when we're reading books, pauses don't necessarily happen where punctuation says they should happen. It happens wherever the narrator thinks they should, along with the punctuation. So I think that's, you know, literacy, I think, is the big thing for me. And also because having traveled a lot, there's a lot of countries that rely heavily on Braille signage for accessibility. And I think not being able to read it is kind of, it's almost depriving yourself of an accessibility accommodation that is super, super useful.
Okay. So I was looking at this more as sort of just for your reading preferences, kind of in an amusing way. So now I feel like I have to say, in terms of like learning to read for kids who are blind, Braille is definitely essential. You can't learn grammar and spelling and things like that if you're taught only audio. Yeah, so I feel like I have to agree with you that like just the importance of Braille, and I feel like maybe in advocating for why or in explaining or describing why Braille is your preference, it your deeper reason is to kind of make sure people understand the importance of Braille. Where I was just coming in with like, well, for me personally, it's just really convenient to be able to listen to audio. But I see that you guys are really pushing for, you know, just the importance of Braille and how essential it is for blind children learning to read, all those things. And I absolutely agree. So just wanted to say that. And it's interesting, I forget which one of you was talking about kind of like punctuation. I'm taking this writing class and I'm learning how to write, and I don't actually know really how to write dialogue. I don't know where the punctuation is supposed to be, whether it's inside the quotation marks or outside of the quotation marks, because I haven't read a book with my eyes for decades. And when I was reading, I wasn't really paying attention to those kinds of details. So I'm regretting, I wish that I could look at a book in Braille, because the only books in Braille that I've read are like board books for my toddler. And there wasn't a lot of quotation marks or things like that. So yeah, I definitely, you know, if you can't see it or feel it, then in audio, that doesn't really come across. You don't really know how, where that punctuation is landing. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about there's different types of audio. We can have a human narrated voice, or we can have like a JAWS voice, an electronic voice. I guess I'm the one that chose audio, but you guys listen to audio as well.
Yeah, I still use it for certain things.
Where do you care whether it's human narrated or electronic? What are your thoughts?
For me, I think that it depends on what I'm, again, like using it for. If it's a novel or like a book, and I mean, my first choice, like I said, would be Braille, but let's say I'm using audio, I prefer a human voice to kind of get a sense of cadence. Mm-hmm. If it's, let's say, my textbook, again, if let's say I'm using audio, I prefer like electronic text, JAWS, because that way also, I can at least go with my arrows, and if there's like big words, I can like look at how specific words are spelled. Of course, I won't get a sense of like all like the layout, but I can look at that. Or if I can, you know, if I need to find a specific thing in the book to quote, it's just easier to copy paste, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I find with having an audio textbook that's with a human voice, which I've tried, it's just too much fast forwarding and backwarding and trying to copy a quote but not knowing where the punctuation is. You still don't really sometimes know that in JAWS and stuff, but I can copy paste.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. 100%.
What about you, Clem?
Yeah, I would say almost always human is preferred for me. I read some books, you know, electronically if I absolutely have to. But almost always prefer a human narrator. And if I need to, I would say I've developed a skill set based, thanks largely to my learning Braille and using it for most of my life, that I can make very, very educated guesses about punctuation and about formatting. So I have an idea. I've read enough books in Braille that I have an idea of where things generally go. So I can not copy and paste, but I can transcribe something with a relative level of accuracy, and then I can double check it later. I would say the only time I read electronic books nowadays, maybe a textbook or an article, but if I'm reading for entertainment purposes, then it's 99% of the time going to be a human narrator if I can get one, unless again I can't get the book as an audiobook, and I really, really, really want to read it.
Yeah, that's I will only get e-text if there is no human narrated, and it's but I it only for kind of learning type, like if I'm reading like a psychology book or something, like a personal development kind of book, I will not read for pleasure with e-text or JAWS ever. And I tend to not even finish the books that I'm reading with JAWS because it doesn't pull me in the same way the human narrator
For sure.
does. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, a human narrator though, the voice matters so much. So have you guys not listened to something because you can't handle the voice?
100%. Especially like if let's say like I'm reading a book and like halfway through the narrator switches, it just throws me off so much because like sometimes they'll do like the voices for characters and things, right? Or they'll give characters like a specific like personality through the way they record the book, that when the narrator changes, it just throws that off for me. So sometimes I'm not able to get through it. I also find it harder when the narrator switches every couple chapters or by chapter as well.
Oh, I mean, it's usually a different perspective,
Oh, that's fine.
like
Sorry.
the
Yeah,
back
because
and
then it's
forth. Yeah.
that's kind of cool because then you get more of that personality. Some books, like I've noticed, I guess depends on where you get them. Like there'll be volunteer readers and they'll all
Oh.
just take a chapter.
Right.
That's a little harder.
Yeah, I think I found those more in university settings, where they have to produce textbooks and they go through certain services, that yeah work largely off volunteer readers. But for my entertainment, I usually don't need to get my books from there. But I totally hear what Ginny's saying because yeah, it can voices do matter a lot. Certainly for books. I know for audio description because that's somewhere that where I work. Movies, I have watched movies or not watched them based on how good the audio description is. Unless I know the movie well enough to just turn it off. But typically, audio description really does matter to me. And so I definitely prefer, a certain type of narrator for a certain type of book. And you can tell if the narrator, once you've heard enough books, you can tell if a narrator is really invested in the book or not. So that definitely matters for sure.
I have become a bit of a narrator snob. Like if I get a book from the library and it's Random House Audio or a publishing company that has published it, and I know that it was published for like Audible or for for people to purchase or something, it's gonna be really, it'll be fine. I know that. And if it's a volunteer reader from the CNIB library or something, then it's a bit of a question mark, right? It's like it's just a human. They're not a voice actor. They're not trained in this. They're just a lovely person that volunteered their time to do this, which I totally appreciate. But yeah, I kind of definitely like the ones that are published by a company that does this.
And such a great example is Harry Potter. The American versions and the British versions are of course narrated by different people, Jim Dale and Stephen Fry, who are both amazing people. But I think part of what narration, part of the charm of narration partially is, who you listen to for an entire series, if it especially if it's fiction, right? Most of us who grew up in Canada or the States, we grew up with Jim Dale. And so for me personally, Harry Potter read by Jim Dale was a huge part of my childhood. So hearing Stephen Fry read it, which is also really good, But it's very jarring because a lot of the interpretation is different and a lot of the kind of character nuances change. You know, it's kind of, I hear a lot of people say, you know, Stephen Fry is the one you listen to if you want to hear, you know, like your grandpa reading you a bedtime story. Jim Dale is the one you listen to if you want kind of more a magical, you know, performance of the book.
Interesting.
And that's, so that's a huge, that's super amazing for me. And I love talking about it, which is why I think that's kind of one reason I love audiobooks. Because yeah, I mean, Braille, wonderful as it is for other things, it doesn't give you that sense, especially for fantasy or fiction, it doesn't give you that sense of magic, I find, as a good, well done narrator does.
I also found that too. Like, it's funny, like in my childhood, like I was a really big fan of Lucy Maud Montgomery and Beverly Cleary. So in all kind of all the books in the series were like the ones I listened to anyway, were read by the same person. And then as I got older, even now when I go back and like look at them for nostalgia, because they've been re-recorded, it feels wrong to me when I listen to them with other narrators, right? I also have noticed too that like there's now like a big kind of shift as well. Like the authors will actually sometimes read their own books. And I kind of love that because, of course, you know, the narrator is doing a great job. But when the author themselves is reading it, I'm like, okay, that's how it's supposed to be. You know, there's that sense of like, this is how they want it to sound and deliver it. And that's like a big kind of thing for me.
That's true.
Even though I prefer like Braille for fiction and things like that, it's so cool to see like how the author would do it.
Yeah. It's funny, when you read a series and it's not the same narrator for all the books, and sometimes even names can be pronounced differently by a different person that's reading it, and it can really throw you off from a series or something. So yeah, it's very, very important. I have heard the argument for Braille in pleasure reading that a narrator sort of like puts their interpretation of the character. Do you find that when you're reading Braille, you can kind of do that for yourself, or is that an issue for you guys?
Yeah, so I think it really depends on the book. You know, but it's absolutely true that a narrator puts, you know, it's almost like it hands you an interpretation and says, this is how it's supposed to sound. Braille and print too, if you're reading it just on its own, is like that, right? You're supposed to be able to kind of, it's in your head. You can do whatever you want with it. But to me, if I can, I like to read both, and I like to have my own kind of ideas of what the character is supposed to sound like, and then I like to hear the narrator. Of course, that's an issue when the narrator and I don't agree, you know,
I was gonna
then it's
say,
like, well, who usually wins? And you know, sometimes it depends. Sometimes when I read a book again, I'll be like, you know, now that I'm reading it again, like, yeah, I guess I can see why you would have a voice like that or have an accent like that. And you know, I can be convinced to change my mind. But definitely 100% Braille is much more subjective than an audiobook is.
Oh, so that's a really interesting point about accents, because I read a lot of books where there's characters from, you know, Ireland, Scotland, England, and the narrator will do all those accents. And sometimes I'm kind of like, how do they know that person is Scottish? Or like, does that come across in the text that the way they're speaking? Like, I'm just so curious about that. If I was reading Braille, would I get that it's being said? You know, I don't know. Anyways, it's just something.
I think sometimes it depends on the setting too, like regions and things. Sometimes you can tell. But I think there's also like a movement now, which is kind of cool. It's like finding narrators from the places that you're writing about to read it. 'Cause I know like in the past, like, you know, it would be like, okay, can you do this accent? Cool, great, you're hired. But now I find it like so much more authentic because we're kind of focusing on, you know, being authentic and representation that like it just enhances it like 10 times more when it's done like that. It's also interesting too that like you kind of how you were saying like Braille is subjective because I definitely like find that like I become the narrator, you know, like your inner voice kind of becomes a narrator. Like I did that with the book, The Hate U Give. For some reason, I didn't get the last few chapters in Braille, so I was listening to it in audio, and it, I don't know, it can make or break your experience, like Clement said, because the names were definitely pronounced different than I was pronouncing them. And it's I find it really hit or miss that way.
I would agree with that. And I'd also add, for accents, yeah, it definitely depends on the book. You know, Harry Potter is always my golden example because everyone who listens to this podcast knows how much I like Harry Potter, if you're a regular. And the nice thing about it is very well written out. You can tell who Hagrid is supposed to be from the West Country, and the way that, you know, his spelling is when it's his turn to talk, you can tell that's the kind of accent he's supposed to have.
Okay.
Same with Professor McGonagall, you know, is a little bit more on the nose because her last name is Scottish. And so, but, you know, Jim Dale will do it. But it's interesting because, you know, Stephen Fry doesn't necessarily feel the need to make her Scottish, you know, per se. So it is very interesting. To read, and again, narrator, this is where, you know, narrators and their interpretations are so interesting, because one person might think that person is Scottish, but another person might say, oh, I don't know, like, they might, yeah, they're British maybe, but I don't know about Scottish, you know. So it really depends on the narrator.
Yeah, like, are you supposed to recognize the name is Scottish and then do the voice, like, or do they do research the characters or read the book in advance and figure that out? Like, it's just kind of amazing to me how it all comes together.
Yeah, and I think that's one area where I like audiobooks more than I like Braille, because with Braille, if it's unclear, my inner voice doesn't necessarily know
do the accent
or do the accent. Or even if it's a different name that I don't know how to pronounce, I'm like, you know, like Sean, like your name, your last name, for example, is like, Marsolis?
Yeah.
Marsolice?
Yeah.
You know, like whatever, right? Because, you know, if I've never read a French name before, or if I didn't know French, I wouldn't necessarily know how to say it.
Yeah.
And because I've never heard you say it, you know, I wouldn't know either, right? So I think that's one advantage that audiobooks can have, and even if it's not an advantage, it just makes them really more interesting to listen to, because then you kind of get to find out, ooh, is that how you're supposed to say it, or is there a different a different way?
Yeah, especially with like names, like if I go through like a whole series or something saying a name one way and the narrator says it a different way, I'm like, no, it has now been named this, because
it's how not it is Mia, it's Maya.
It's Maya because this is how I have read it.
Like, yeah. But it's interesting though, because then sometimes, you know, the narrator you've always been reading can be wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Totally.
Yeah, that's true as well.
So it can go the other way, but that's something, that's a dimension that I find, of course, from audiobooks that you don't get with Braille. So I really like kind of digging into that and geeking out over it, for sure.
Accents kind of, like, not scare me, but, like, in terms of, like, sometimes if I'm, let's say, reading and I read a name, I'm like, okay, like, you know, if this person had an accent or whatever, like, what if they were born here and they didn't? So, like, I don't know. It always worries me. It always, like, worries me, because I'm like, okay, I have to, like, read the story to, like, discover, like, you know, more of their history and, like, more of, like, what they are. Right. Because I feel like if I do something wrong, like, you know, in my head, like...
In your head. Wow. Okay. I could see if you were reading out loud to
somebody.
Yeah,
I was going to say. Yeah. For me, if it's in my head, I don't care who thinks...
Yeah.
That's all me.
Where is
I don't think you're going to offend anybody if the voice in your head doesn't or does have an accent.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even assume, you know?
That's so good. Hi there, listeners. I just wanted to interrupt to tell you how much we appreciate you, but we really want to get our message out there to as many people as possible. So if you are enjoying this podcast, please help us by sharing, liking, subscribing, leave us a rating. And we are so grateful to you for listening each week. And now back to this episode. Let's talk about Braille. So there's different types of Braille too. So we can have hard copy Braille, which is like paper, or we could have electronic Braille. Do you guys want to explain what electronic Braille is?
So Braille typically comes in two forms, as Sean just said, hard copy and electronic. And basically all we mean by electronic is that it's Braille that's being displayed on a device, which is aptly named a Braille display. Whereas hard copy Braille is going to be printed paper, and electronic Braille can be either books that are properly formatted for Braille, and can be put on Braille specific devices, or just any old PDF or Word document or EPUB that you open on your computer, that just simply outputs all the text to whatever device you're using.
So the Braille is refreshable. It's little pins that pop up into the right letters,
That's right.
symbols, contractions. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And every time you switch, every time you scroll down a line, the Braille will change, which is why we call it
Refresh.
refreshable Braille.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you have a preference?
For me, I think it really, okay, if I have to pick a general preference, hard copy, easy to okay, more tedious in terms of like making it, I guess, and more volumes, because Braille book doesn't come in a single book. But I also like it because I can transport it in my backpack. If I want to go, read at the beach, I don't have to worry about my expensive technology kind of getting ruined. And I love reading, like, if I could more, I wish. I want to be able to read outside, read. I want to be able to carry a book on the bus. In terms of like how I use them both kind of conjunct like together, it depends. Like for fiction and for essays and things, refreshable Braille is usually fine. I prefer the other one, just yeah, depending on how big your Braille like screen is. But for things like poetry or like math equations, things that very much have like a layout on the page that isn't, because the Braille display, you only see one line at a time, right? I really strongly prefer physical Braille so you can see it. I also prefer physical Braille for most things because it's easy to like skim. I find like I can flip pages back and forth and look at two things at the same time. Whereas like with the display, like yeah, I can like scroll up and down. It's just a bit more tedious. I can't see things just side by side. But I also like how on the Braille display though, you can see where the cursor is going. So you do get more of that like progress of like where you exactly are in the document. And you could also like bookmark it and like again copy and paste things like that if you're using like a textbook and like a Word document you have to quote things. But yeah, those are my two like different ways of using it, or a few different ways I should say.
I'm actually going to play devil's advocate and say I prefer electronic Braille, because for the simple fact that I can have as many books with me as I like, and not worry about weight or how much it costs to buy those books or how much space they take up in my house, because I am an avid reader, and I have, I think in my Kindle library, I have 70 odd books sitting there. And I, as much as I love hard copy, I don't really want to imagine how much space those 70 books would take up in my house. And the benefits of hard copy Braille, now that, such as multiple lines and being able to flip pages, this is, I think, where tech is advancing a lot, and now we have multi-line displays. Three or four lines per display. So it's still not quite as good as a page. So I love hard copy as well, and I want to reiterate that. But where when it comes to reading for pleasure, I would say just by the fact that more ebooks are available than hard copy ones, I would typically go with electronic Braille because it's easier to get my hands on.
I have a question. So are you, I this just occurred to me now, but you're having to like arrow around while reading with refreshable Braille, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Like you're arrow
Yes.
down, arrow down, arrow down, arrow
It's
down
like a
each line.
wheel. Yeah, it can be a wheel sometimes. So it's not really that much work, to be honest. You just
It can be either a scroll wheel or a button, depending on.
Yeah, it's really easy.
So, are you scrolling with one hand and reading with the other, or you scroll and then hands come together and then scroll?
So for mine, I read on the line, and then in front of, like, on the outer side where my thumb would usually sit, there's a button.
Mm.
So, like, I'll just, like, I'm reading, and I hit it. Kind of like how, you know, when you're typing, you don't have to move your whole hand to hit the space bar. Kind of like that. And then on the other one, there's a scroll wheel, which I just use with, like, the side of my hand. I just move it down.
Okay.
I'm not sure which one you have, comment. There's so many different types.
Well, and I think this is more, this sounds more like a question of, how you scroll as opposed to your specific devices. So I typically scroll with one hand and I read with one.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Regardless of which device I'm using.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, oh, does that get in the way? But yeah, if it's like in the middle and you can use a thumb.
Yeah, I like that better.
Right. Okay.
Because I'm gonna break this to all the vision teachers who had me.
Yeah,
when I was a kid.
I know. I already.
I was taught to read with both hands. I only read with one. It was a bad habit that I never got out of, and I still have it. So I can read just as fast with one hand, as I can with two. And so scrolling with one hand, kind of regardless of where the button is, it's usually, like Jenny said, you know, usually on the side of the device. Some of them will have them in the middle. Or the front surface of it, but either way, I can definitely scroll with one hand and read with one, and it doesn't slow me down.
Blind children across the world are like, I am playing this for my vision teacher. Clement can do it. I can do it too.
I wish I could. I find if I read with one hand, it feels like I'm using a pen with the wrong hand if I only read with one hand.
I was never taught how to read Braille the right way, so I actually kind of read with two fingers. I think of it as like typing, how people type like Hunt and Peck, where they just look and type with two fingers. I feel like that's how I read Braille.
I use my two
one
pointers.
Finger kind of numbs out, and then I switch to the other index finger on the other hand, and I just go back and forth.
Yeah,
I've never really thought about it until I started using Braille again, with DBW as when I'm narrating. But I tip and I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'm not supposed to read with. I'm supposed to be with two, so there you go. That's in the world. It's never come. I can't take it back.
So, just in terms of the Braille hard copy versus electronic, like I kind of find maybe it's because I'm not great at Braille that the refreshable Braille is more perfect. Like you can feel it and decipher it, where sometimes hard copy Braille might have. It's like the dots are not as, what do you call that? Crisp, I guess. Does that, but for those of you who are experienced Braille readers, is that even an issue?
I find it, of course, it depends on the material of the book.
Yeah.
So if a book is printed on thermoform or something that's a little bit more durable, then the dots don't fade as quickly as they, you know, do on traditional paper where, it does kind of fade. And I would agree with you, Sean. I don't really, it kind of disrupts my reading experience if I have to try and decipher what a dot is supposed to be or what one cell is supposed to be. But, you know, I can work around it because I am an experienced Braille reader. I can figure out what it's trying to tell me. But it definitely, it kind of grates on me the same way, you know, a print reader wouldn't like to read things that are smudged.
Yeah.
It's also interesting, though. I agree. But then I also find, like, I have to take more breaks with refreshable Braille because it makes my, like, fingers numb more because it's, like, more pointier, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely easier to decipher. Like, I super agree. But then I have to take more breaks.
Yeah. So sharpness would definitely depend on, you know, for sure what you're reading on, whether it's paper or refreshable. Maybe it's because I play guitar. But because I have calluses, that sense of sharpness doesn't really bother me too much. And actually, I find it helps.
Yeah, I was thinking that because I've started to play guitar a little bit, and I use Braille for things like playing cards or Scrabble, and I'm like, oh, it's a little bit harder now to figure out what that Braille letter is under my calloused fingers. Yeah. So yeah. Do you because find that?
I do a little bit. I think I've done it long enough that it doesn't feel like I've lost feeling in my fingers. But for sure, you know, if you're new to that experience, or if you've never done it before, yeah, then it does kind of feel like, ooh, I feel like my fingers are less sensitive than they used to be. And that's a super popular question. You know, people ask me whether I read Braille or listen to audio more because I play guitar and I can't read Braille as well.
Right. So the question, is listening to an audiobook reading? What do you think? I think it is. I'm just going to say that because it's the only way I can really read. And I still talk about it as I read the book, even though I listened to it. I would say I love reading, even though I love listening to stories. But yeah, what do you think?
So, okay, this is interesting because
we can disagree. It's all good.
Yeah. It's fine. But it's funny because like I've been called like ableist for my opinion, which I think is quite ironic. So I think the actual act of it depends how you slice this. The actual act of reading, no, it's not the same. You know, if we're saying, oh, my kid can read at a whatever level, no. You have to be able to hit certain benchmarks, certain things. It's not the same. Now, the way you were using it, Sean, I agree. Like, if you, like, the intake of information, you're doing that just as, you know, the same as everyone else, right? So, like, it is reading. Like, if you're doing an assignment, if you're doing whatever, like, you can talk about it just as competently. You can analyze it probably just as competently. I mean, depending on, like, if, you know, let's say if it's, like, fiction, a novel. But the actual, like, act of reading, I think sometimes, like, people forget that reading itself is a whole other thing, I guess.
Okay, I think I get what you mean. So like a kid that's learning to read, you can't just put on an audiobook and say, I know how to read.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like you can't say, I guess, like, I'm a really good reader if you're not a really good, like, quote, reader, because the actual, like, word of reading, I'm sure, is like, defined as, you know, something else, because books were like originally reading wasn't like, it's not listening, I don't know, but then we get into this whole thing where stories right were historically told in an written. Oral way,
that's right
so it's I think it's a very complex and nuanced thing, and like, I mean, just to kind of sum it up, I don't think it is, but I'm not saying that it's not equal. I don't know. Yeah, okay. That's my broken opinion.
Okay. I have a question, but I want to let Clement have an opinion on this first.
So in some senses, I agree. But I think it really comes down to how rigid you are with your definitions. And those definitions can sometimes change depending on context. Because reading a story is not the same as learning to read. As in reading and writing, when we talk about it in terms of like linguistics and learning a language. Learning how to read Japanese is one thing. And the definition of reading says that it's, you know, it's the action or skill of reading written things. So if you're going by that definition, which is what Ginny was talking about, you know, kids learning how to read and literacy, then it's audio isn't quite the same. But for the context of this podcast, where we're talking about reading books, I would definitely be with Sean. I would say audiobooks are, they are every bit the same in the sense that you are reading a book. And so I have no issues with saying I just read the best book last week, or I just read a passage which I found really thought-provoking or things like that.
Yeah.
I would say that it is when it comes to reading books and reading stories, which is what we're talking about. If we're talking about literacy, then I think it's a different question.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a child then that, say, you know, grade three or something, and they're still maybe, you know, like reading, but not reading as fluently maybe as an adult, for example, if they said, I can read, or I read Harry Potter, the entire series, but they listened to it. Like, it changes the meaning a little bit. Did you read it, mm-hmm. or did you listen to it?
Yeah, so you, right? you have, that's where clarification comes in, mm-hmm. right? So like for an example, I'm fluent in Japanese, but I could read a book in Japanese if it was audio, but right. I'm not a good reader in Japanese because my Japanese Braille knowledge is atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only recently started to learn it. So I think it's important to clarify what we're discussing.
Yeah.
Because I'm a good reader in the sense that I can read a Japanese book and I can understand most of it if it's an audio.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still reading a book.
I mean, I guess I'm not a good reader anymore. Like, I think I used to be able to read, but because I don't read Braille very well, I would struggle through if I was trying to actually read. So it's so weird because I can listen to something that's a very high level and I can comprehend and I can tell you about it. Yeah. I'm not a good reader.
I think
you're an avid reader.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Because you read a lot of books.
Yeah.
But your Braille reading level may not necessarily be the same, right?
Yeah.
So
I'm kind of illiterate, but I can write. It's a weird thing.
I also think it gets like jumbled too, because like Clement said, clarification context matters. But I think like sometimes, you know, if we like say, because kids, you know, whatever, or whoever is learning to read, like if, you know, they're going to be like, okay, but, you know, we say that like comprehending the story is the same thing. So I did, you know, read Harry Potter, right? So like, where do you start kind of saying, okay, you've learned your reading skills, now you can just, you know, choose audio if you so wish,
because
right?
comprehension and reading are not typically the same thing.
No, they're not. But I'm saying that it gets jumbled. I think that's what I'm saying, is that like for people who are learning or for kids, right? They're like, well, people are saying, like, they're saying that it's the same because I can tell you what happened in Harry Potter. I can, you know, explain it. So why do I need this if I can, you know, do that and do that, you know, listen to my stories?
Yeah.
So I guess like it gets kind of muddy. I don't know.
I don't think comprehension and reading get muddy at all. I think the two are very distinct, but maybe we can agree to have different opinions on that one.
Oh yeah. Well, no, 100%.
It's interesting because I was at the Braille Challenge, the regional Braille Challenge last week, and there's a reading and comprehension is one of the tests, right, in the Braille Challenge. So I don't know, like to be able to read it and understand it might be different, a different skill than to listen to it and understand it. Because when you listen to it, someone else is putting the pauses in the right places,
right.
And the flow is there, and it's a lot easier maybe than I know it would be for me, for sure, if I was trying to read something. So yeah, very interesting. Maybe just to wrap up, Jenny, you mentioned at the beginning that some people feel, or you feel, or I'm not sure, that Braille is becoming obsolete. What do you want to say any more about that?
Like technology is really, really good and it's advancing and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just how we choose to use it. I think the best way I, excuse me, like to explain it to people is, you know, let's say you're using a computer or whatever, and the power goes out in your computer and your whatever device you're using dies. You know, will you be, and I'm more, I guess, I'm not talking about the people who didn't learn Braille, because that's not really their fault, but like I'm more like talking to the people who think, you know, oh, we don't have to teach it. Like the person then would basically be illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't be able to read and, you know, do those things. Another way too is like I explained it is like, you know, okay, what if like a sighted person, you know, they were just not taught like how to write their letters, how to do those things. You know, would that still be okay? And a lot of people are like, no, like that's a foundational skill. And I'm like, exactly, right? It's the same. And then I've also heard people say, but you know, sighted kids also get put on computers now. And I'm like, yes, but they're still reading the letters on the computer with their eyes on the screen. Mm-hmm. So there is that distinction there, but like you know, you can't take away a foundational skill. Also, like, it's a part of our, like, I know that people don't use this often, but I kind of like to think of it as part of our culture, like disability culture, blind culture. That's our history. Why do we not want to, you know, have that, right? Like, I'm South Asian. I grew up speaking Punjabi. I speak English mostly now, like, to, you know, people who aren't my family. But, like, just because that's the primary way that I communicate here doesn't mean I want to lose that, because that's a part of my culture and a part of my, you know, ethnicity. And I kind of see, you know, Braille is a language, but it's the same sort of feeling for me. I don't want to ever lose that. That's like something that is a part of like who I am.
And it's interesting for the, you know, we're talking about Braille being obsolete. I hear that a lot. But it's funny because as somebody who's traveled a fair bit, that seems to mostly be true in the Western English-speaking world. Other countries where technology is less readily available, sometimes it goes the opposite. Sometimes there's no Braille, depending on, you know, the country. But for a lot of the countries I've been to, Braille is actually still very, very much emphasized and is all over the place. And everybody is taught to read Braille because your city signs have Braille, or your train station maps have Braille, or your convenience store cans have Braille, which is amazing, by the way.
Cool.
And in some countries, kids still learn how to use a slate and stylus, you know, which amazes me, because we always talk about how obsolete Braille is. And I look around and I go, you know, I don't know if it's as obsolete as we think it is. But certainly coming back to the English-speaking world, I think it's a problem because, yeah, like Ginny basically just outlined everything that a lot of people say. And I agree with her that it's a fundamental skill that you cannot be without. And for people who say, well, kids get put on computers and iPads and whatnot early now too, well, those kids also can't type very well, and they still have to learn how to spell and punctuate and all of that, and format and all of those things. Being able to read those letters on a computer screen doesn't magically teach you how to format in the same way that, and so, you know, I think that's, not sure if that's the greatest argument by saying, well, kids learn how to use, you know, iPads early on now. But for Braille, it's even more of an essential because we can't even see the letters, and we can't even see how things are formatted and indentations and margins and stuff like that. And so in order for us to be able to, you know, write both casually and, you know, in professional settings, whether it's emails or resumes or stuff like that, or even a book, if you want to become a writer, one of the things you have to understand is how writing works in terms of its structure, not just grammatic and sentence wise, but also visually. What kind of book are you trying to write very much will influence how your visuals will come out. And if you don't have a firm foundation in Braille, I think it's much harder, or print, if you lose your vision later, I think it's much harder to get an understanding of, you know, what your publisher says. If they say, well, you should indent it this way, or you should format it this way, does it matter? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the typical response you'll get from someone who only grew up on audio. So I think Braille is definitely a must. If we are to stay relevant.
Yeah,
I agree. And on behalf of those kids that can read print, but it's a struggle, definitely wish that I had learned Braille sooner. And I think I would have incorporated it a lot more into my life. So yay, Braille. Though I'm still team audio for the pleasure reading. But actually I don't really have an option, because I mean, that's not fair. I guess I could work on my Braille skills, but Maybe in my retirement, I'll do that.
Sean, I will say I completely empathize in terms of working on Braille skill because that's how I feel about Japanese right now. I can, when I was in Japan traveling, you know, I read maybe one or two words at a time, and it took me forever to read, you know, signs. And I was like, man, wish I'd done this sooner, you know. So
playing apples to apples is pushing my Braille abilities. So, you know.
But if you have enough Braille to play Scrabble, hey, I think you're out of pretty
good. Oh, Scrabble's easy. One letter at a time. I can handle that. But
yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, you guys. Thanks for being here for this important conversation. Really appreciate
it.
That was awesome.
Yeah. And thanks to our listeners, and join us next time.
This podcast has been brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Music for this podcast is composed by Sean Bishop and Clement Chow. Production and audio editing by Rob Minot. For more information about Blind Beginnings and the work it does to support children and youth who are blind and partially sighted, along with their families, visit us on the web at www.blindbeginnings.ca, and also remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.